The afternoon begins with a presentation on the plans for the Australian Stock Exchange to support and service the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme. Anthony Collins is a General Manager of Emerging Markets at the ASX and has many different roles over 13 years in development in new interest rate, equity, commodity, energy and environmental markets, which is great background for this session. The primary focus of Anthony's current role at the ASX is development of financial markets for carbon, water, natural gas and coal, and he's responsible for developing the commodity markets operated by the ASX. So he's been directly engaged in climate change and emissions trading issues since managing the R&D department at the Sydney Futures Exchange when it first prepared to facilitate emissions trading in 1999. So please join with me in welcoming Anthony to the stand. Thank you.
Thanks, Fred, and very pleased to be here to talk to you this afternoon. The focus of my talk today is to look at the role of the financial markets, and I guess looking at what's happening out there at the moment, this could be a very short presentation. But it isn't. I'll talk for about 20 minutes. And then I'll take some questions. So I'm going to talk about the financial markets, the role of the financial markets, specifically to facilitate the trading of carbon pollution permits and other Kyoto units. But I'm going to link that back to some other energy and environmental product markets which operate in Australia. And I'm also going to talk about the role of the capital markets to support the scheme as well. In terms of the likely evolution, we'll have a look at Europe and see how the financial markets have evolved there, what we can learn, and how we expect the markets here, the financial markets here, to service the scheme, both over-the-counter and exchange-based markets. On that last point, I'll specifically talk about ASX's plans, own plans, to support and to service the scheme. So I guess I'd start with talking to financial market infrastructure, what is going to facilitate the trading of pollution permits and Kyoto units to the extent which they can be accommodated in our domestic carbon pollution reduction scheme. And I guess the key point to make is that the financial markets are about facilitating price discovery and risk transfer. We're talking about a market, 420 million tonnes of CO2 per annum, $20 potentially a permit. That seems to be where a grey market, over-the-counter market, is trading thereabouts today. We're talking about an $8 billion a year financial market that's been created around this scheme to support its objectives to reduce emissions at least cost. So to put that in perspective, that is larger than our domestic cattle and our domestic grains markets. If we're talking about a scheme that goes out 5 years, that's roughly $30 or $40 billion worth of risk that needs to be managed. So compared to the size of the interest rate markets domestically, which is driven by Commonwealth government securities, that's a fair amount of issuance that the government is going to put out into to the marketplace. And clearly, that kind of a market needs market infrastructure, be it over the counter, and I'll talk a little bit to that, but also through an exchange. But I guess I'd be missing the point if I didn't sort of hit home that really it's the forward price for these pollution permits, which represents the marginal cost of abatement, which sends a very powerful price signal to firms to internally pursue abatement opportunities, to invest in abatement opportunities up to that marginal cost of abatement. So that's the cost of a permit going forward, one, two, three, four, however many years the scheme goes out. Firms should be looking at that forward curve and trying to work out, is it cheaper for me to pursue internal abatement, to invest in abatement opportunities, or to buy these permits or any fungible Kyoto units out there in the market to meet my compliance obligations. I guess there's two forms of markets. There are spot markets where you buy and sell things and you settle them very shortly thereafter, and there are forward markets. So forward markets come in two forms. Over-the-counter markets, where trades occur bilaterally between counterparties. They can be negotiated directly between counterparties, or as markets evolve and mature, clearly that's more efficient to occur through brokers. And then, of course, contracts that are traded in the over-the-counter market can be standardised for trading on an exchange. So strictly speaking, that's a futures contract where you buy and sell something at a future point in time at a price agreed upon today. And the counterparty in those transactions is a clearing house as opposed to a counterparty. the benefit of a counterparty clearinghouse is that it calls margins each day, so you're only ever exposed to one day's market movement, and the clearinghouse is very well capitalized to offset that credit exposure. And particularly in this environment, you see in financial markets, banks and others who don't want to trade with themselves are gravitating to exchange-based markets where they can benefit from a clearinghouse. Spot and forward markets don't operate efficiently without clearing and settlement services, so it's very difficult to envisage the Australian equity market working without CHESS. The Commonwealth Government securities and the Australian interest rate markets wouldn't work without a system called Austraclear, and a market of the size, which I gave some insight to earlier, wouldn't work efficiently without a clearing and settlement service. We'd expect with carbon pollution permits, just like the case with emission unit allowances in the EU, that liquidity is going to gravitate to the forward market. So these are people buying and selling at a future point in time agreed upon today for a whole number of reasons. It's often the cheapest and most capital-efficient place in which to trade and to manage your exposures. Unlike bonds and equities, which pay coupons and dividends, pollution permits or Kyoto units are just compliance instruments. There's no need for you to hold them now if they're burning a hole in your balance sheet. If you can buy and lock in their delivery at a future point in time. One of the key differences between Europe and Australia is going to be how these things are allocated, at least in what we know about the proposed scheme design today. So in Europe, clearly they freely allocated the permits. In Australia, they're proposing to auction about 70% of them. So people will have to put up the capital to purchase these things in the auctions. And 6 or 12 months ago, I would have said the banks had the best balance sheet to go in and fund that and sell forward. But I'm not so sure anymore how that's going to play out. But the important point to make there is that participants that have compliance obligations don't have to go into a spot market. They don't have to go into the auctions that the government are proposing to operate to lock in their price exposures or the delivery exposure they have to acquire these permits at the end of the day. So that's the market infrastructure. What does it do? It translates that marginal cost of abatement through a price signal. It facilitates, these forward markets in particular, facilitate risk transfer, which underpins investment. Investment in reducing emissions, investment in abatement opportunities. So that is a very powerful price signal, just like the forward markets for interest rates is a signal to investment for raising capital. The carbon price signal is going to be a signal for the debt and equity markets for those companies that are looking to raise capital to reduce their emissions or to invest in new clean technologies, for example. On that very subject, ASX would have about 15 companies already specifically listed that have raised capital to pursue different clean technologies, be they solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, etc. There's no shortage, or there was probably up until the last 6 months, 12 months ago, no shortage of capital out there. Obviously, we're going through a difficult period at the moment, but Australia's equity markets are very well known for their ability to raise capital to support sectors like the mining sector, like the clean technology sector, and other sectors that require capital. So that's the role of the financial markets. To put it another way, forward markets will drive the signal to the debt and equity markets that will invest. Firms will use that capital to innovate, to reduce emissions and to compete with each other, which is the objective, to produce carbon-intensive goods and services, electricity, transport, mining, etc., at least cost to the end consumer. And ultimately, there's a demand-side equation to all of this as well, that we'll all be looking at different products and services that are differentiated on the basis of their carbon intensity, and we'll all make decisions, and there'll be very much a demand-side response. And this thing is circular, and clearly this is going to take a number of years for us over time to reduce our emissions to become a less carbon-intensive economy. I know that Blair spoke early today about the scheme design, so I won't spend too much time on it other than to hit home a few points about really how good the design of the scheme is when the government put out the green paper. Politically, of course, you see lots of lobbying and most of the discussion really focus on the issue of compensation. And more recently, with the Ghana Review completing its work, the Treasury work that's going to come out in the white paper at the end of the year, the next debate, no doubt, will be on the trajectories. Where do we reduce our emissions to? There hasn't been that much debate on the scheme design because fundamentally it's pretty good. Clearly we've learnt, and they're not hard lessons to learn, from Europe around emissions reporting is addressed through reporting legislation. Clearly the scheme has got unlimited banking capability, so that should smooth out the volatility. If there's supply or demand issues, people no doubt will bank things for future use if there's too many permits out there in the first instance. So that should smooth the price path for the scheme as well. But looking at the scheme that's being proposed, and there's a lot of water to pass under the bridge between now, in the white paper and the legislation passing next year to a pretty tight timetable. A lot of water to pass under the bridge yet. But looking at the scheme design as we see it, it is a uniquely Australian scheme. You can't export permits as it's proposed. There'll be a limitation on the importation of Kyoto units at a firm level. There's no proposed direct link with any other schemes that are out there at this point in time. And what we've seen from the early modelling, even if they did their very best job, it's hard to see how they'd come up with a scheme where the domestic price would reflect export parity. So they'd probably be, depending on where they set the trajectories, our targets, our caps for the scheme going forward, it's unlikely that domestic price will equalise with the international price for things like the certified emission reductions in the secondary market. So initially, at least in the first few years, the scheme looks like it'll be a very domestic scheme, which means it'll price will be driven, no doubt, by political events about the international negotiations and what does the scheme look like out beyond the 5 years. If there's unlimited banking, what will that do to the price when the links are opened up? And it will also be driven by the domestic energy markets, which contribute most of the emissions. So you'd expect there to be a reasonable correlation between pollution permit prices and electricity, gas, and if we've got an MRAT or an expanded renewable energy target with renewable energy certificates as well. Just in terms of getting the scheme design right, I thought I'd just touch on this slide. This is a bit of market microstructure analysis looking at transaction costs, namely the bid-ask spread in the EU ETS phase one. Just to hit home midway through phase one, there was some uncertainty about the scheme design and the reporting, clearly issues that have been addressed in our proposed scheme design. There was uncertainty about whether certain countries could bank permits from phase one to phase two, and the market had a lot of uncertainty as to how short the market was, or in fact whether it was short at all. And all of that scheme uncertainty translated to, as you'd expect, a massive fall in the price of the permits for phase one because you couldn't bank them to phase two, but also an increase in transaction costs for market users. No doubt in about 6 or 12 months' time, the academics will be running the same methodology over bans on short selling of equities to look at what that impact has on transaction costs in the equity market. I mentioned the government's timetable for introducing the scheme. I'm sure Blair spoke to this as well, that the legislation is looking to pass in the middle of next year. At the moment, I guess there is a market, what you call a grey market, I'll talk to that a bit later, for trading and what we expect to be traded in a scheme that hasn't yet been designed. But it isn't until the legislation actually passes that we've got something definitive to trade through standardised documentation in the over-the-counter market and through standardised futures products listed on an exchange. There's absolutely no reason why forward trading can't and shouldn't commence before the permits are issued once you know what the scheme design is. Firms have risks, forward risks that they need to manage, and forward markets are where they manage those risks. So firms are already forward selling things like electricity, which are particularly carbon intensive. There's an associated carbon input to that price. They don't have a market in which to manage that. As a result, investment, say in the power sector, is suboptimal because they don't have all of the information to invest in new infrastructure, new generation capability. And up until a few months ago, there was even uncertainty, and I guess there still is, in the forward market for electricity. Nobody knows what price to factor carbon into the forward sale of electricity into 10 and more particularly into 11 and into 2012. So today we're operating in an environment where firms need to manage their risks. They know they've got a risk, but there's no market in which to manage them. Clearly, that gets better once you've locked down the scheme design and you've got a market which you can manage those risks. That financial market will start as soon as the ink dries on that legislation. Then once the permits are issued, this is giving a bit of insight to what ASX will do, we'll provide its Austraclear infrastructure, and I'll speak to that later, to provide settlement services to the spot and to the forward markets, both over the counter and on exchange. Looking now to Europe, because I think we can take some lessons from Europe as to how the markets here are going to support the scheme. Clearly, they didn't have the scheme certainty locked down until the first part of 2005. You had early trading in EUAs, in the over-the-counter market, just like you're seeing here today in Australia, before the scheme design was locked down, before the national allocation plans were locked down. Well before that, after Kyoto was signed, you had some activity in the clean development mechanism. So you had some funds that went in, projects in developing countries to reduce emissions below a baseline, and they get credited for that, of course, and they can sell them. And those early funds did particularly well, developing CRs at around 1 or 2 euro for a market that now trades in excess of 20. The market started to build liquidity. We saw futures listed on one exchange in April 2005. You now see 5 futures exchanges in Europe. It's a much larger mass, I guess, than what we have here in Australia. Liquidity is primarily in one of those futures exchanges. The trading initially in 2005 to 2007 was primarily over the counter. But what we've seen in the last year, year and a half, is that activity move on to an exchange, a futures exchange, because that's a more efficient and lower cost environment, transparent environment in which to trade, but also because of counterparty issues. The bigger the market gets, the more constraints you have with your counterparties. Again, the more efficient it becomes to book all of those trades, net them down, novate them through a central counterparty clearinghouse. So we see liquidity now trading, I think in June 2008, we see the velocity of trading in the forward markets at 2 times the value of the underlying permits that are an issue. So to put in perspective the size of the relative schemes, Europe emits its footprint about 4,000 million tonnes a year. The scheme covers about 2,000 million tonnes a year. Australia has a footprint of about 580 million tonnes a year. The scheme is going to cover around 420 or 430 million tonnes a year. So we're about one-fifth the size, 70% of our carbon footprint domestically. We're about one-fifth the size of the EU ETS. And the view of the Australian Financial Markets Association, which services the over-the-counter market, is that that market is big enough, it's got a big enough critical mass to support a vibrant and well-functioning financial markets, and we'd agree with that. We don't need linkages to other schemes to make that financial market work. Put that in comparison with New Zealand, it's got about 60 or 70 million tonnes of coverage as a country. It's perhaps a little bit larger than that, but initially its scheme will only cover 30 million tonnes a year, so one-eighth the size of the Australian scheme and about one-fortieth the size of the European scheme. So it's no surprise that the New Zealand scheme is a very open scheme that links with no constraint to the CDM mechanism, so it can clearly leverage that liquidity that exists in that market. But you see liquidity build as the market matures. You see transition from the over-the-counter markets to exchange markets. Liquidity is gravitated to the exchange in Europe that services the energy market for the obvious reason. It's connected to all the generators and all the other companies in Europe that are emitting. And there are clearly synergies between the markets, the energy markets and the environmental product markets when it comes to clearing as well. So that's how Europe's evolved. And here we can see the price of the EUA, the 2008 pollution permit in Europe, through to about July this year. And you can see there the volume build there, a million tonnes of CO2 per annum. You can see that liquidity build over time. And what's interesting is that it started off just being futures, then they introduced options, and now they've got a market on the CRs to support the pollution permits as well. Looking at this chart, it's a bit technical, but all I wanted to point to is really the blue lines here, which is the 2008 permit. Given that in an emissions trading scheme you've got unlimited banking there is a clear cost of carry relationship between 1 year and the next. So you can manage your forward exposure into future compliance years through trading the next calendar year, and that's where all the liquidity is currently in the DEC 08 contract, which expires, I think from memory, around February or March next year. And then you'll see positions move into the in the calendar 09 contract. Futures contracts are listed out to 2013 now. There's legislative underpinning for the first 5 years. There's clearly legislative uncertainty beyond EU ETS phase two, and you don't see much trading out beyond 13 because of that uncertainty today, just like you don't see much trading in the over-the-counter market today, given there's no uncertainty. There's no certainty for the Australian scheme. And here you can see open positions, and open positions are just the number of open futures contracts at any one point in time. Clearly the trend in volume and open interest upwards is a sign of a very healthy financial market servicing the EU ETS. So just translating that to how we think the Australian scheme is going to evolve. Prior to ratification of the protocol last year, there's very limited involvement by Australian companies in the CDM mechanism. We saw our first forward trade on something that hasn't been defined or a scheme that hasn't been locked down yet earlier this year. There's been a number of trades since that first trade. The government has locked down who is going to provide its registry and its connectivity to the international market from a registry perspective. We expect that registry to go live in the first quarter of next year. And we expect to see the standardised financial instruments, the swaps transactions, with forward transactions and futures contracts start to emerge really from the point we see the ink dry on the legislation in the middle of next year, assuming that that legislation gets up and isn't deferred, which again is a risk to all of this happening, could be pushed back. Given that in Australia we've got financial markets servicing the power sectors and electricity in particular, we expect us to see a fairly liquid market within a couple of years. So when the GARA review talks about you're building the infrastructure between now and 12 for the real challenge that lies ahead, that includes financial market infrastructures, because the liquidity just doesn't emerge on one day just because you've listed a couple of products. Liquidity and confidence in that infrastructure takes time to build, and we advocate the earlier we get started with a financial market to support the scheme, even if its objectives aren't particularly ambitious in the first instance. It's best to do that, get a price signal for the capital markets sooner rather than later. Just to translate the relative size of the markets in terms of their coverage, if they were trading one times the number of permits issued, you can see that the EU ETS supports around 8,000 contracts a day, and that's about right. It's trading somewhere between one and two times the underlying. We'd be trading 600 contracts a day, which is about two, almost three times the number of electricity contracts that we trade at the ASX today. Having said that, 600 contracts a day for electricity shouldn't be sneezed at. It's considered to be, I guess, one of the most robust and successful electricity markets globally. You don't have to be trading tens of thousands of contracts like we do for much larger bond and equity markets for the market to be providing an important function. In terms of the coverage domestically, I'm sure you've seen variations of this before. This is from the Green paper earlier this year. Most of the country's emissions come from the power sector, from the generators. So the 21 generators in the NEM would account for just under 50% of the obligations under the forthcoming proposed scheme. The next 25 firms would probably, together with the first 25 firms, 50 firms would account for about 80% of the country's emissions. They talk about 1,000 firms being covered by the scheme. It really is going to drop off after the first 25 or 50 firms. Top 25 to 40 firms might trade the wholesale markets, as it were, so directly with counterparties through ISDAs in the over-the-counter markets and through futures exchanges. If you're not trading futures or OTC today, it's unlikely you will for a compliance scheme. If you're not managing your interest rate risk transfer through the over-the-counter and futures markets, it's unlikely that you go, or energy markets, you're unlikely to be doing it. For a permit, you'd be going to a bank, and a bank would be selling you, just like they sell you risk management around your currency, your balance sheet, your lines of credit. Your bank will be servicing you as a firm to meet your compliance obligations, and you could trade forward with your bank to meet your compliance obligation. They, in turn, would be offlaying their risk into the wholesale financial markets, just like they do with interest rates and capital and capital raising for lines of credit, etc. In terms of a precedent in Australia, I guess where we get our confidence that we've got the infrastructure to support the scheme. If the 21 generators account for half of the scheme, probably 80% of the compliance purchasing in the wholesale market we expect for the scheme, you can see very similar growth profiles here for the electricity futures and options contracts listed at ASX. So all the 21 generators, all the domestic banks, all the domestic brokers servicing this market. They'll be the same banks, the same funds, the same brokers that service the scheme. They already are. They're servicing the renewable energy certificate market and other different environmental product schemes around the country today. But you can see the value of futures trading in electricity now exceeds in any given month up to 2 times the value of the underlying market. So that's very efficient forward price discovery. It's a very efficient price signal for the capital markets, and that's very efficient risk transfer. And then the green there is just the open position building over time. So to sum up how ASX is going to service the scheme, I guess, in the first instance, the first opportunity we've got to service the scheme is to introduce futures and options as the ink dries on that legislation. And we also accommodate trading in the over-the-counter market so people can trade bilaterally if they want to book those trades with the clearinghouse to benefit from the clearing. They certainly do that for electricity today. It's about how we get 50% of our business for the electricity contracts. It's traded OTC and booked for clearing. Austraclear is a piece that doesn't exist for any of the other environmental product schemes because they're so small today. Austraclear is the designated payment system for the gas and for the domestic electricity market, so it's already integrated into the back office systems and processes of all the generators, all of the mining companies, as well as the financial sector. So it's not like it's new infrastructure. The financial markets and the environmental markets are already using Austraclear for the financial leg, settle the financial leg of a transaction. All we're talking about is Austraclear being the interface to the National Registry to do the physical or the permit leg of a transaction so that you can transfer a permit and get paid simultaneously so you don't transfer a permit and risk not being paid. So you can eliminate that settlement risk, and that's exactly what happens for bonds, bills and equities. In terms of a futures contract, it's pretty easy to mirror any other contract listed on an exchange. It's deliverable, 1,000 pollution permits, and a little bit of insight, I guess, to our value proposition as the largest, by value of trade, the largest futures exchange in the Asia Pacific. If your boss puts you in front of one of these screens, it isn't a promotion. This is an Austraclear screen, so this sits in the back office, and people use this terminal to settle their transactions. But that often happens in the backgrounds and people's back offices, and people never see a screen like this. But the beauty of Austraclear is that Austraclear underpins the repo market, which underpins the efficiency of spot and forward markets for a whole host of financial instruments. Clearly, if you want the forward markets working efficiently for emission permits, you'll want a repo market for the spot, and clearly Austraclear is a very efficient facility for people to lend out the permits to underpin hedges for forward selling activity if markets are to work efficiently. So just to sum up the key points, I guess, really we're in an environment now where we know the scheme's coming. That's a risk that needs to be managed, but there's no market in which to manage it. So it's not until the scheme is locked down, we've got financial markets, are we in an optimal position. Price discovery and risk transfer will occur in the forward markets in Europe. It's 9 trades in the forward market to every trade in the spot market. Expect that to be similar here. The efficient price discovery and risk transfer in the forward markets in particular is what's going to give that signal to the capital markets for raising capital to invest in emissions reductions, new clean technology, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd say today, even with what's happening around us outside, Australia is very well placed with its debt and equity markets, particularly where the currency is, for raising capital to invest in new clean technologies. So I'll leave it there, and that's a web page if you want to look at any more information, including a number of our submissions and discussion papers and things we've written over the last decade, really, but in the last 12 months in particular.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Anthony. We have time for a couple of questions, so please don't be shy. Come forward.
The correlation of price in the EU trading system with the volumes, what sort of correlation was there?
between price movement in the permits.
Yes.
And volumes over time. I think, how could I answer that one? I think over time, volume is building independent of where the price goes. So you see the liquidity in the market build over time. That's just a function of a market maturing. It isn't really driven by whether the price is 21 euro or 25 euro or 30 euro. Looking at those volume growth and open interest, I don't think there's a confidence issue in the EU ETS, at least for the first few years where you have the legislative certainty. You certainly did around EU ETS phase one, and it was looking a bit doubtful there for a while. But what's happened in the last 12 or 18 months in terms of the forward markets in particular trading a multiple of the underlying, I'd say there's lots of liquidity and confidence in the scheme. And there's no real correlation, whether it's at 20 or 30, you still need to hedge or you still need to manage that exposure. But in Europe, yes, there is some correlation between the different energy markets and the emissions. I'm not saying it's 100% or 95%, but clearly what's happening in the energy sectors, gas and a lot of the coal-fired power stations in Europe is driving to an extent, the emissions price.
Okay, well, it just remains for me to thank you, Anthony, for a great presentation, showing us how we are prepared for this. And please join with me in thanking Anthony in the usual way.